The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I do not, and under any circumstances, want to diminish people who really have a problem with the NFL because of the former last year's anthem controversy. Without question, I don't want to do that. That's a passionate issue. I would never want to tell you you were dead wrong. I never want to tell you that your emotions for that particular issue aren't justified, and your anger isn't justified, and your boycotting isn't justified. Okay? But there are plenty of people in my industry that waved the NFL is dead flag for a long time with that, and still believe that this is going to be the death knell to this league. Ratings are so down, and the league is... But I think, I always thought that you had to be really careful, because the one thing this sport and this league does time and time again is that when it gets to, at its core, the entertainment factor of that it pulls on people's emotions, it pulls on people's sense of community for their teams, that was really a hard thing to just break off. Right now, when you look at the National Football League, right, when you look at the standings, when you look for at teams that are good, teams that are in contention, what do you have? You have a Patriots team, for example, that's a little bit more vulnerable. I know we say it every single year, but still, a little bit more vulnerable than years past. Steelers are still rock solid. The Texans have won 6 in a row. Kansas City is an outstandingly, brilliantly fun team to watch offensively. Chargers are sneaky good. That's wide open in the East. The Bears, if you watched them on national television last night, and Khalil Mack, the performance that he put on against the Vikings. Chicago is now good. The Saints are an epitome of offensive perfection. The Rams, again, same kind of team. Fun to watch. Seahawks at 5-5. Russell Wilson is still one of the more exciting players in this league. This is an NFL that is not perfect by any means, but it still pulls enough from its entertainment value that if you gave up on it, if you disappeared from it, if you don't want to be a part of it anymore, I can't tell you you're wrong. That, again, that anthem issue is passionate and it's personal. But I never thought it was going to kill this league, because I knew that people at the core actually love being entertained by this sport. SB Nation AM.
Are you wearing your hat too much to cover that hairline?
Well, yes, I am.
Go to forhims.com/cheer for help. That's forhims.com/cheer. You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Yeah, I was talking earlier about the NFL, and again, I know that people are pretty passionate about the anthem situation from last year, and they've kind of said, I'm not following this league anymore. But think about tonight. I mean, Kansas City and the Rams, it's 2-9-1 teams. This league has got a game tonight that is going to bring pretty much everybody together who's going to watch sports. There's nothing else on. And it's going to be one of those unifying moments. I mean, a lot of Monday night football games, all right, they get good numbers, but it doesn't feel like we're all watching it at the same time. I think this is going to feed that feeling. Like, if you go on Twitter, just watch social media, this is going to be one of those games where just about everybody is going to be watching, who just, you know, sports fans in particular, are going to be watching because of what this game could bring, just the entertainment value. Listen, playoff picture, it's not, I mean, outside of the, you know, the Chiefs maybe getting a little run from the Chargers in the West, I mean, this is not a must win for either team. It's just a game because of the entertainment value. It doesn't, there's really no end of it. Like, there's no, all right, what does this mean when it's all said and done? It's just two teams that play really good football that are fun to watch duking it out. And this league is giving it to you Thanksgiving week. It's going to give you three games on Thursday. A Monday night football game that's stellar. Three games on Thursday. I mean, this is the time for this league to shine. And listen, I haven't always liked the NFL, and I've criticized the NFL on a number of occasions. Some of the things I think they still do is kind of dumb. Yeah, I think they botched this whole Mexico City thing. I still can't believe that they're going to put an international game in Mexico City, and they leave the field conditions up for chance. Oh, Shakira concert in rain. And come on, you know better than that. You got to find a way to take ownership of these stadiums, or find ways to take control of these stadiums a couple of weeks before these games so you can ensure that the field is going to be of the quality you want. You can't just leave it to chance. You nuts? You're putting on an international game here. You're going to be, it's a Monday night game. You got to make sure that field was fine. And they move it to L.A., and people say they did the right thing. And yeah, they did the right thing, and they're not going to hit that much. But still, in the future, take control of the stadiums. But still, tonight I think is going to be spectacular. I think it's going to be great. So I want to get to the college football weekend because I got – so here's what happened to me yesterday. So Saturday. So I'm watching college football. I was watching Ohio State, Maryland, and I was kind of bouncing around a little bit. And I'm looking down at my phone, and you and I had this conversation last week about the Citadel.
Yes.
And we just wanted the Citadel to score 3 points.
That's all we
because
wanted.
Because Alabama shut out LSU and Mississippi State in back-to-back weeks. And we thought, if the Citadel could just score 3 points at any point in the game, I don't care if it's a cheap field goal at the end, it doesn't matter. If they can get points on Alabama, then they own a bragging right that they can market. There's all sorts of ways that they could rub it in LSU and Mississippi State's face that they scored on Alabama and they didn't, right? So I'm watching some college football and I'm just hanging around. I'm upstairs and I'm playing around on my phone, and I get on my phone and I check the Alabama score, and I think it was 10-7. And I was like, wait a minute. Citadel had a touchdown. At halftime, it's 10-10. They played 30 minutes against Alabama, and it was 10-10. So I said, all right, time to see what this is all about. I turn it on. I see the Citadel is the opening kickoff, and Alabama fumbles it, and the Citadel recovers. And I'm thinking to myself, no, this is not going to happen. This is not going to happen. And the Citadel ran a few plays, and then they got kind of stalled, and then Alabama's defense came up, and they kicked a field goal. So the kid comes out to kick a field goal, and he makes it, but there's a penalty, and it backs him up, and then he misses it massively to the right. I mean, it wasn't even close. Alabama scores a couple of plays later. Then Citadel gets the ball. They fumble. Alabama picks it up, scoops it in for a touchdown, and the rout is on. And I thought to myself, wow, that was quick. That didn't take long at all. How would you like to have been in the locker room listening to Nick Saban lose his mind? the Citadel and them. He was tied with the Citadel at halftime.
I'm just surprised in this day and age with technology that no one could have just like hidden a phone.
Oh, I know, right?
Obviously not one of the players. One of the players aren't stupid enough to do that. But, you know, like second assistant to the guy who pumps footballs. I mean, some lowly college kid who just like, I'm just going to secretly record this, and I bet this will go viral. I bet you I'll get clicks. You know, the millennial attitude.
Oh, totally. What Nick Saban must have said to that Crimson Tide football team, it's unbelievable. He must have lost his mind.
He probably went in there and was like, all right, you guys had your fun. Let's
keeping
it
close. We have a lot of respect for the Citadel.
You know, everyone.
But now it's time to play Alabama football.
He could have taken it one or two ways. I mean, maybe this was like, you know, his way. Maybe he was controlling the game the entire time. Like, I bet you we could let them score because we didn't let LSU or Mississippi State score. People are going to talk about us. We're just not a boring football team, and then we'll come back.
Well, I mean, they really poured it on.
Citadel
scored 17 points.
I was at my son's soccer game, and you know, it was like all of a sudden I got an alert, and it was just like eyeballs, and it said 7-7. I'm like, ooh, yay, the Citadel scored, and I, you know, was just happy about that. And then, you know, the eyeballs got even bigger, or like there was more eyeballs when it was like, hey, it's 10-10 at the half, and I'm like, oh my god. And I was like, would this go down as the greatest upset in college football history?
I thought that immediately, right? Just playing around, I said to myself, okay, what are some of the best upsets in the history of sports, I mean, just in all the sports. Now, I immediately ruled out all of the professional sports because they're paid athletes, and we talk about this all the time. There's just a small gap between the best team and the worst team. There's no such thing. So obviously you head into the college ranks. And, you know, I started thinking about, okay, Appalachian State and Michigan is the biggest one in college football that I can remember. And the biggest one in college basketball that I can remember was it was not UMBC over Virginia. I think it was Chaminade over Virginia in the early years. Chaminade, I didn't even know there was a school named Chaminade. I mean, I have been told, because I did a little bit of when this went down. I have friends of mine who are from Virginia, and one friend in particular that I used to work with in Las Vegas, and I kind of sent him a message about this, because he went to Virginia Tech. So he hates Virginia. So I asked him, I said, UMBC over Virginia or Chaminade over Virginia? And he pointed out, he said, look, I was going to school at the time, you know, in the early 80s when that went down. And I'll tell you what happened. He goes, the entire Virginia Cavalier team, they were the number one team in the nation. They went to Japan for a couple of exhibitions. And on their way back, they played Chaminade in Hawaii. It was just a flight, you know, just to break up the flight. They went and played Chaminade. And Chaminade had a player on their team that played against Ralph Sampson in high school. And so he was familiar with Sampson's game, but Sampson was also sick. He had some food poisoning or something, was going down. He had flu or something, that he caught on the trip. And so he wasn't playing particularly well. Nevertheless, Virginia was still, they weren't just a Ralph Sampson show. They still had really good players. So nevertheless, it was still a major upset. He goes, UMBC winning, though, he goes, that's a big deal. Against a Tony Bennett team that plays really, you know, played really good defense. So he told me UMBC was the bigger upset than Chaminade. To me, here's what I remember reading about the Chaminade, okay, was the Chaminade upset in, I think it was 82. The Chaminade upset in 82. Here's what happened. It happens in Hawaii, and it happens late, okay? So it's kind of one of those late games in Hawaii. So the word gets out that Chaminade beat number one Virginia, and it gets sent through the AP wire all around the country. All right, so so places are supposed to then relay that out to their news wires, and people refused to do it because they thought it was a misprint. They thought they were being pranked. So they weren't 100%, they couldn't verify the story. But they said, no, this is not true. There's something wrong with this. This is not a real score. I'm not reading this they didn't give you details. They just sent you the score, right? So you'd get an alert. Here's the score. Here's the score. Here's the score. And so people said, nah, there's something wrong. That's not right. But UMBC was on TV, so everybody got to see it. But that's the biggest one. And that's either one of those. Take your pick. Is the biggest one in college basketball. Let's go back to the Citadel over Alabama. Let's say they pulled it off. I think it's multiplied by a factor of 10.
Easily.
Because Appalachian State, when they beat Michigan, Appalachian State was a national championship team in Division II or 1AA, as they called it back then. They were a national champion. They were a good school. I mean, they weren't Michigan good. They weren't beat Michigan and Ann Arbor good. I mean, that's why it's an upset. But they weren't. I mean, the Citadel was not a very good football team. Citadel was a 500 team in their own conference in the SoCon. That would have been remarkable. So I had a vision of what the college football world would have been like. I mean, I was sitting there at halftime going, all right, if the Citadel pulled this off somehow, just somehow pulled this off. I said, because you think about how unbeatable this Alabama team was looking. And then here comes this team. Some people didn't even know where they were from.
I still don't.
Right? Charleston, South Carolina.
There you go.
Some people don't even know where they're from, and yet they were playing toe-to-toe with Alabama for 30 minutes of football, and they just couldn't do it for 60 minutes of football.
Which for them, that's the victory of the season.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, look, they got a huge check from the Crimson Tide, and for 30 minutes, they were tied with the number one team in the nation. They went into the locker room. Get this. They went into the locker room to talk strategy about how to win the game against Alabama because it was a realistic possibility. Not a realistic possibility,
The coach went down on one knee and gave him the little Giants coach speech?
Oh, yeah, I don't know, but he must have. You're
just
right?
Just one time.
Just one time.
They may beat us out of 99 times out of 100, but there's still that one.
One time. Like, listen, when you have these teams that come play out Alabama, like, they go into the locker room down 48-0, right? It's just like,
it's over.
We're not making adjustments, right? We're not talking strategy. We're just like, yeah, all right, guys, rest up, get your Gatorade. We're going to go back out there.
This is a game where Tua only plays one quarter.
Oh, absolutely, right?
There's no reason for you to. We even said it's like, you know, he's kind of banged up. You don't need him to play.
No doubt. Unbelievable. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, I want to get back to the NFL, but we'll continue the college thought as well because Ohio State's Michigan's leading up to something good. Alabama-Auburn, of course, it's rivalry week in college football. And the playoff picture is looking a little bit more status quo. That's next on SB Nation AM.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts on Black Friday and be one of the first 25 customers to make a purchase. You'll receive a free limited edition O'Reilly Auto Parts hat. Plus, check out the 5-day sale from November 23rd to November 27th. Mark your calendars now. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. I forgot to mention, we were talking about the Citadel-Alabama game, and what if the Citadel had pulled it out? Still, USA versus Soviets in the 80 Olympics? Is that still tops in terms of upsets? I think so.
I mean, it's an upset, but I think it's different when you have two college teams.
Yeah, but that was a college team. That was a college team
against
massive professionals, like very professionals.
Well, because if we go that route, then we have to give credit for the Soviets beating USA basketball in the 60s.
They didn't beat the Soviet. They didn't beat them
or the 70s.
Well, they beat them in the 70s, but that was really controversial.
Yeah.
They had like three different endings to that game. But yeah, but that was still, I mean, again, the Soviets beating the United States in 72, that was still against college kids in the 72 Olympics. The Soviets still had 28, 29-year-old, we've been playing together for 10, 15 years against a bunch of college kids that were, you know, always brought together at the last minute.
Yeah, no, I think you do have to include the miracle.
Yeah, because they played against the Soviets at Madison Square Garden before, and they lost like, you know, 10-1. And then they went, you know, and then they beat them in Lake Placid. So, yeah, I think that's still probably up there.
What about Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson.
See, that's another one, man. That's another one.
I mean, I know
one.
They're professionals, but both of them are professionals. I mean, that one was...
You remember when that went down? Like, you didn't believe it when you heard it? Like, well, I didn't watch it. I didn't... You know,
no, because,
we
that was another one.
The
fight was in Japan, so it was at a weird time.
Yeah, and it was...
And it wasn't... It was one of those, like, you how you were describing, you know, Chaminade beating Virginia. It's like, we didn't... I don't really remember hearing it that night. I remember hearing it the next day.
I remember hearing it like after it happened, right? But I don't remember hearing. Yeah, there were fight writers that didn't go because their newspaper, whatever, was like, nah, you're not going to Japan. You don't need to go there. He's going to probably beat this guy up in half a round. And then Buster Douglas wins. And that was a quick championship, wasn't it?
He was like, didn't he have it for like a month?
Champion for a couple of months. Then he disappeared
off the face of the planet. And then the only time we ever see him now is like, you know, whenever that date comes up.
Right, right.
It's like, oh, you remember this guy? He's the 10th anniversary, 20, and isn't he like 400 pounds now or something?
Oh, yeah. I saw him like on a pictures on a motorcycle, like hanging over the motorcycle.
Yeah, you look at him like, man, you were a boxer that knocked out Mike Tyson. Because Mike Tyson still looks like he could go.
Yeah. Remember Tyson's camp? Like, they were so ill-prepared, they took a rubber glove and filled it with ice water, and that's what they were using to break down the swelling. It was just a mess. Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson would be up there. But if the Citadel had pulled it off, it would have been, take any of them and multiply it by 100. It would have been crazy. It would have been crazy. Think about the chaos in college football that day. Oh, my God. Just seeing Alabama fans faint at halftime was enough for me. It's like, wow. Like we were talking about earlier, that coach, I don't even know the coach's name for the Citadel, but that coach was probably like, oh my God, what do? I got to talk to these guys at halftime, like with the strategy to actually win. Oh my God,
we have
actually make adjustments. What are we going to do? He said afterwards, he goes, we're a second half team. Yeah, okay. All right. Against Alabama, they're a second half team. Are you thinking they're going to come out of that locker room and just continue to screw up? Like Nick Saban and the coaching staff are going to allow this team to play 60 minutes of absolutely god-awful football to keep you in the game. But remember, the kid was lining up for a field goal in after the possession, and I was thinking, my God, they're going to lead in the second half.
And then
they're
really
going to
lose it. Then they're just, you know, they kind of choked it away. What was it, like 33 unanswered points or something?
Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
They rolled. I didn't hang out with that game after that. Like, once I saw Alabama get the defensive touchdown, I was out.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm done.
Right.
I don't need this anymore.
The dream is over.
Yep. Too late.
Even Chaminade coaches were like, oh, okay, we one half of football. That's all we got to remember.
That's all we got. We'll make a t-shirt out of that. We'll be all good. God. So this weekend, we got some college football games, Ohio State and Michigan. Ohio State, Maryland was a good game. That was a good game. That was really fun. I'm not a fan of either programs because of what they did this year. It was kind of the Scandal Bowl day of those two, but they put on a good show. That was a pretty good game in overtime. Maryland really played good. I was kind of feeling for them a little bit. I mean, listen, I'm not a root for chaos guy. And I'm not that kind of person. I just want to see it play out. And
Ohio State's had like two. I think it might be even back to back Scandal Bowl games.
Yeah, exactly. Because they were just in a game with
Michigan State.
Michigan State, right? Same deal.
Who has the bigger scandal?
Gosh. So that was those were the two. Remember the beginning of the season? Those were the two stories. Those were the two summer things we talked about.
Yeah.
Maryland and Ohio State. The two stories that kind of dominated were DJ Durkin and what was going on with there and Urban Meyer and his lies. Those are the two big stories of college football. They met. Gave us a pretty good game.
And Zach Smith still, I mean, like leading up to the game, he's like,
yeah, right.
Guess what? I'm taking everybody down now. Watch. You want to see pettiness in action? See Zach Smith in the dictionary.
Yeah, exactly. UCF got a primetime game against Cincinnati that, come on.
That was a reach. They were trying. They were trying to.
I do not understand ESPN's
trying to get national support.
Right, but here was my deal with game day. Okay, when they were there, I get it. Ohio State's won a lot of games. They're playing Cincinnati. UCF is a ranked team. They go to these big games. It's a big game in the AAC. But here's my problem with this. If you have to keep reminding us that UCF is good, then something's wrong, because you don't have to do that with other teams. You didn't, when you went to Washington State, when you went to Pullman, you didn't have to constantly remind the public that Washington State's a good football team. That was a game. They were playing Oregon. It was a good game. When you go to Alabama, you don't have to remind us that Alabama's good. When you go to Michigan or Ohio State or anywhere else, Oklahoma, you don't have to remind us that they're good. Over and over again in that broadcast, they kept telling us that UCF was good. UCF's good. Why? Because people, there are people who don't believe they're good as Alabama and Ohio State and Michigan and Oklahoma and Notre Dame and Georgia are good, or Clemson are good. They just, there's just, people don't believe that. And ESPN just saying it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again doesn't make it happen. And I respect UCF. I like them. I like them as a, but it was almost, I was getting nauseous how many times they were just defending this program.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, we have actually arrived. It's Thanksgiving week. Thanksgiving Thursday, Black Friday coming up, holiday weekend. God, it's cruising. And then Christmas. Christmas decorations.
The Christmas decoration's been up for a month now. Come on.
No. I mean, in people's homes.
They've been up for a month now.
Not in my house. Your house?
No. Well,
like we do it after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like Thanksgiving happens, and then the Friday after Thanksgiving, my wife breaks out the stuff, and we hang stuff up.
I will say this: 90% of our decorations will go up after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
There are a few things up already.
And see, we don't get it out because I don't do it. Like, I have to get it. I have to get the tubs out. And
well,
I'm
that's
not doing
and
that.
That's the thing.
I'm not doing that early.
Mine are up in the attic. The only way to access the attic is through our garage, and there's a lot of stuff in the way of accessing the attic that I just haven't had the energy to do, or the want or desire. But we like, see, for Halloween, we had this mirror that my wife stole a few years ago.
Stole a few years
stole.
Ago?
Stole. She nice. Stole it. Back, actually, I can't say a few years ago. It's over 10 years now. So I think the statute of limitations is over on that one.
I'm not a lawyer, so I would not know.
Yeah, I'm pleading to you as a lawyer. I put this out on public. Sorry, sweetie. Just give me I'll bail you out. But no, we have this mirror that it's always been above our fireplace. And we've always, you know, for Halloween, we decorated in lights. You know, it's got orange lights and, you know, spider webs in it. And it looks really cool. It looked very festive. And it was funny because our neighbor saw it and she's like, oh, that reminded her that she needed to put up her Halloween decorations. Well, you kind of get used to light in the living room. Like just that different light kind of created the holiday mood for us. So once Halloween was over, obviously we had to take it down. I was like, oh, kind of like the lights. Let's put it. Put white lights in there. So that's why, I mean, you know, we've had like that. That's been up. That's a decoration, I guess.
Well, when you said Christmas decorations have been up a month, I would challenge somebody.
Well, I was saying, you know,
somebody. No, I would challenge somebody's sanity. No, I didn't. I didn't say selling them. I said putting them up. If somebody is honestly putting up Christmas decorations on October 19th, then I would question their sanity. Like, yes. That's crazy. That's like, that's insane. Just leave them up all year round. If you're going to put up Christmas decorations October 19th, leave them up all
but
year
we are round. In that weird transitional period where, you know, I'm driving around the neighborhood. There's one house still has their Halloween decorations up. It's like, oh, okay, come on.
Oh, good for them. They're keeping the spirit alive.
You know,
they're not giving up that dream.
You need to take those down, by the way. But you're starting to see people who are putting up Christmas decorations outside their house.
Yeah.
But then it's mixed in with those who have the inflatable turkey.
Oh, yeah, and don't get the inflatable turkey.
Yeah, now there's one house on our street. I really like what they did. And it's just a bunch of pumpkins put like on bales of hay. And there's an orange light, like an orange and whitish light, I guess a light orange, I should say, shining on it all through the night. And all the pumpkins just say is just give thanks.
Oh, that's sweet.
And I was like, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's sweet.
You know, just I mean, that's very fall. It's very autumny. No inflatable turkeys.
Yeah, that's good. No, that's no, that's good. That gets you in the nice Thanksgiving spirit. That's very excellent. That's excellent.
Now, are there many houses in your neighborhood with Christmas decorations up outside?
Not yet.
Not yet.
There will be one. There's one on my next street over. That's the only one that's got Christmas decorations out. But not now,
is it that type of house that leaves them up year round?
No, they just do it early. I know the family. They just he just does it like a few weeks early before everybody else. He's always prided himself on being the first in the neighborhood to put stuff up.
Have you ever gotten to those shows where it's like, you know, Christmas war, how, you know, Christmas?
Yeah, I watch them all the time. But I usually watch them in a kind of a maze in my head of bewilderment as to somebody that dedicated to that.
Yeah,
crap.
But also it's because they start in September. They always say it's like, oh, I started decorating my house in September.
Yeah, you know, if you watch those shows, I read up on it because when I was living in New Jersey, there was a house in Staten Island that was very famous for putting up Christmas stuff. They make them do it in July. So they could film it for the show. So they make them like they come in and they go, they tell the neighbors, hey, we're going to be filming this show and we've chosen this house, and they make them do it in July. And then they go back for some, like, you know, maybe some B-roll later, but they set it all up, set up the lights. They film it, makes it sound like it's Christmassy, makes it feel like it's Christmassy. And then they, you know, air it in the Christmas time season. So they had the whole town was like, the whole area of the guy's neighborhood was all aware that he was going to be putting up Christmas lights.
See, you didn't even think to ask that could ruin people's perception, did you? You didn't go spoiler alert before that?
No, not at all.
We wanted to dream that this was all being filmed around Christmas time.
Yeah, that's true. But usually, you know, there's a lot of risk in, you know, filming it last Christmas to air it in one, because you don't know if you're going to get picked up. So no, it's pretty good. It's not a bad show, but I always amazed at people's dedication to putting up Christmas lights, because I don't put up Christmas lights. I put up a few, but I don't put it on my house. I don't get on a ladder.
The wreath?
I don't do any of that stuff.
You got a wreath, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think we do. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone has to have
some
wreath.
I put them on the porch. I put some lights on the porch, but I don't put any. No, I'm not getting on a stupid ladder to put up.
You're not going Griswold?
No, I've never gone Griswold, and I never will. I never will do that. I might one year but I just have no interest in that. I don't like ladders. I'm not stable on ladders. I don't like them, and I won't do it. So that's my thing. I always put them on the porch. I'll make it look good, and I'll put them somewhere else, but I won't put them in the house. It's ridiculous. I'm not going to die putting up Christmas lights. It's Christmas lights.
You won't die.
I'm not going to fall off the roof.
You're not going to fall off the roof.
You say that I'm the most uncoordinated guy I know. You don't. I have no business being on a roof. None.
Listen,
I have no athletic ability whatsoever. If I lose my balance, I'm not gaining it back. I'm not some sort of, like, you know, I'm not like, what do you call those guys that are excellent with the hand-eye coordination? If I'm up on the thing and I lose balance holding myself up, trying to stretch out, I'm done. I'm out. I'm done. Good night.
Now, see,
I'm the guy you read about.
I need to buy a ladder. Now, I think that's part of my problem, because I actually will die, because I have one of those, like, I have a stepping stool, you know, where it has like two steps, you know, to get to those hard.
So you
do
climb up like the when you shimmy up the drainage pipe to get up on the hot tub?
No, usually what I end up doing is I have the little stool, and if I can reach it, I'm standing on my tiptoes, I'll do that.
Oh, okay.
But if I can't reach it, then I usually put another little stool on top of that stool, or I'll grab a chair and put the chair on top of the stool to get up there. I'm all those memes that you ever see of people, you know, have ladders stacked on top of cinder blocks on top of another ladder. That's me.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to do that.
I have this makeshift stuff always going on, and my wife sits there, and she just knows. She's like, yeah, you know, how's the insurance policy? That's all.
Right.
That's what she wants to know. Are we up to date? I just want to know.
All right, 800-777-2907. One other house cleaning note from the weekend. Les Miles, former LSU coach, is going to be the new head coach at Kansas. Good luck now, Les Miles. We won't be hearing from you again. You know, here's the thing. That's a good
no faith? Come on.
That's it. No, that's it. Good luck. Good luck, Les Miles, at Kansas, a place that's had. I remember there was only one brief period of time where Kansas football was halfway decent. Other than that, no one has been able to turn it around there. I mean, Charlie Weiss tried to turn it around there. I mean, Charlie Weiss, who coached Notre Dame, for crying out loud, couldn't turn it around in Kansas.
Hey.
Maybe Les Miles can. Les Miles is a good coach. I think Les Miles got a raw deal at LSU. I've said this all the time about Miles' career at LSU, okay? I can't begin to tell you how many LSU people I talked to over the years on the radio. And LSU would be struggling, and I would say, is Les Miles on the hot seat? And every one of them would say, Les Miles ain't going anywhere. You know, he wins them 9-10 games a year. He ain't going anywhere. I'm like, okay, fine. But eventually, it happened. He finally got let go. He was 2-2. The Mad Hatter finally had to leave. Maybe he's able to turn it around at Kansas. Kansas should have patience. They stink at football for a long time. They should have patience. He's going to try to build something there. But it's not LSU. He's not. This is where the real test is going to occur in terms of recruiting for Les Miles. Because LSU is a destination school regardless of who's the coach. You are going to get a good number of highly skilled Louisiana recruits, Houston area recruits, right? Southern Mississippi recruits that are going to want to play at LSU. It's a storied program. It is a historic program. And if you're coaching there, you're going to just generate, just the way it is. You're just going to get a certain amount of kids that are just going to want to go there. Kansas, different kind of situation. Now he's really going to have to work. He's a good recruiter. He's a very good coach. This is going to take some time, but I am afraid he is going to disappear. He is going to be, oh yeah, I remember, hey, Les Miles is coaching at Kansas, and they're still mired in a 3-7 slot.
My only argument to what you just said is Kentucky. Kentucky is a football school now.
Yes, but so Wait a minute, Ron. It's not a football school. It is a school that has had a good football season.
They weren't that bad last year.
No, they weren't that great.
They're growing.
Either. They're not that great either. If they pull it together for the next couple of years, you're right. I agree. If I'm Les Miles, listen, it is hard. It is hard to turn a football program around that has been decades and decades and decades in the swamp. They had a brief period of time. There was a time Kansas was pretty good. They had a brief period of time where they were good. So I don't want to say that it's just all been terrible. But for the most part, it's been terrible.
And let's be honest. I mean, if you are a number one recruit and your heart's set on, or you have no other choice but Big 12, you're going to go to Texas. You're going to go to Oklahoma. You're going to go to Oklahoma State. There's a whole bunch of schools you'd rather go to that are high on your list. Kansas will probably be... what, maybe, yeah. Now with the addition of Les Miles, maybe sixth on the list?
Yeah, and maybe there'll be students or student athletes that are like, I want to play for Les Miles. I like Les Miles. He recruits well. I want to be part of the building.
Or those who just want to stay in state.
But that's what South Carolina did. Listen, South Carolina was a mediocre school for a very long time and would argue a pretty lousy football place for a while. And then Lou Holtz got there and he started to change the culture a little bit, but still not that great. I mean, South Carolina was, even under Lou Holtz, a school that would, you know, win a few games, maybe surprise you a little bit, but was never going to beat Florida, was never going to beat Tennessee with Peyton Manning, never going to beat some of the big boys in the SEC. When Spurrier got there, he started changing it. But one of the things Spurrier always told the kids from the in-state was, listen, you can go anywhere. You want to go to Georgia? Fine. Go to Georgia. It's only right across the border. You want to go to Clemson in the upstate? Great. Fine. Go to Clemson. But here's the deal. No other place locally where your parents can watch you week in and week out is going to offer you the kind of reward that you can get if you change this program. If you come here and change this program, your life will never, ever, ever be the same. Ever. It is different. You will be one of many great athletes at those other schools, but we have yet to have a really strong recruiting class that turned this around. And those guys, like the Marcus Latimers, who actually said, yep, I'm going, and Jadeveon Clowney, who went, and all those athletes that went to South Carolina helped change the culture. It was a brief period of time because, you know, they're kind of back to being mediocre again. But that's what I would do if I was Les Miles. I would go to these people, these kids, and say, listen, Bill Snyder's had the run of the state for a long time for local Kansas kids. If they wanted to go to the sixth program, they go to Manhattan. Come to Lawrence and let's do something completely different. Let's do something that's never been done before. Let's get this program to be a Big 12 contender, and we can do it with you and you and you and you and you. Let's see how that works. But let me just say this, and I'll throw this out there. I thought Les Miles would hold out for a better job than Kansas. Okay, I mean, look, there's better jobs out there than Kansas. This is a real rebuilding standpoint. It's a real rebuilding.
And
job.
I don't want to
a school that's good that's dissatisified with their guy and jump in and say, do that.
And I don't want to put age into it, but it doesn't seem like he's at the age where it's like, you know what, let me rebuild a program and put 10 solid years to get it to up to snuff.
No, I agree. Yeah, he probably's not doing that. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would think for someone like him, he'd probably want to go maybe even to Kentucky.
Yeah,
he's like, hey, somebody already laid the groundwork for it. Or, yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of colleges who are going to be looking for, I mean, why now? That was the other thing, too. Why now? Why not wait till the end of the season?
Wait to see, like, what about, you know, maybe Maryland is a better job than, I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I mean, there's going to be openings. Wait to see where the openings, because there's going to be schools that are like, we've got the foundation. Coach didn't get us there, and Les Miles could be the next step. He's going to be building a program at Kansas. That's hard to do. I don't know. Let's see if he has the patience for it. All right, 800-777-2907. Tony D, Ron Culver, SB Nation AM.
Gifting Map is your map for great gifts. Head over to giftingmap.com today. Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So Alex Smith broke the fibula and tibia in his right leg on a sack in the third quarter against Texas.
His leg went sideways.
Oh,
like, from
God.
Painful. Halfway between the knee and the ankle, the leg just went sideways.
Makes me like squeamish. Like I didn't get that game in my area market, but did they show it over and over and over again? Like the Theismann hit, like the Theismann tackle when they not only crushed Theismann's leg, but they aired it 30 times on that Monday Night Football broadcast.
You know what's weird with the Alex Smith one that was watching a highlight? They have it blurred out.
Ugh.
Like the last highlight I saw, that just on SportsCenter, it was just blurred out.
Parental discretion is advised. Is that basically what they're saying?
Slap
Don't
a
watch
tag on
old kid. Oh, he needed immediate surgery. Now the Redskins will go with Colt McCoy.